Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thank you for listening to AFR. We appreciate everyone who tunes in on the radio, or you listen via the app, the American Family Radio app, which makes our programming available 24/7 anywhere in the world where you have high-speed internet. So make sure you take advantage of the app, as tens of thousands of people already are. Joining me to co-host the program today is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson. How you doing, Brother Fred?
Not too bad at all. Hello, hello, hello.
How's Venus?
Venus? It's pretty good today. Have a nice breeze out of the north.
What's a breeze on Venus, though?
little dusty.
We need to explain.
Yeah,
to folks,
we always need to. Go ahead.
We talk about...
social distancing.
Venus, because it's social distancing. He's in a studio that's about 50 miles away. No, about 50 yards away. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to social distance again and right. Trying to be respectful.
So Ed and I are on Earth.
Yes.
Yes.
And we call it Studio
Venus. And Fred's
Venus.
Out there on Venus. So we're trying to, trying our best to be CDC compliant.
Yes. That's us.
Follow the rules.
We're rule keepers here.
We're rule.
No rebels.
No rebels here. All right. So much to talk about. Ed, should there be listeners out there also within our universe?
Yes.
Who want to engage with us on, as you call it, that their internet?
That's right.
Do that.
This solar system is equipped for video. So if you would like to see us, now you won't be able to see Fred. We can see Fred.
We can see Fred.
You could see Tim and I if you'd like. And the way you do that is you go to either Facebook or YouTube, search for Today's Issues, and click through.
Search and you'll be able find. To see
us. Yes.
Seek and you'll find.
That's right. That's Bible right
that's
there.
That's Bible right there.
Yeah.
And we post the stories that we talk about on our Facebook page as well. So
and we have a good little group of folks who watch on Facebook, and they've kind of become good friends. I think they grill out together and, go to the...
It's a community.
Go to the beach together when they're allowed to.
Properly distanced.
Yes. Huh? No, they like each other.
We appreciate our fans, if that's what you want to call them, on our Today's Issues Facebook page. All right, Fred, what's leading the news this morning?
Well, about 24 hours ago when we were doing this program, news was breaking out of Beirut of a huge explosion. And, don't know about you guys, but when you hear of an explosion in that area of the world, you kind of automatically think, okay, there's been a bomb has gone off. There's been an attack or whatever the case may be. But it is growing more clear that what happened in Beirut yesterday was not a result of an attack. Some people, right away say, well, did Israel do something? No, it didn't. And no one at this point is saying that there was an attack. But there was a huge, huge explosion on the waterfront there in Beirut yesterday, to the extent that there's at least 100 people that were killed and more than 2,000 people injured. Now, you probably have seen videos by now. I mean, the repercussions of this explosion. We were showing a video this morning of a guy that was driving along a distance from the explosion, and the force of that explosion tipped his car right over. I mean, that's what you're talking about. So on that waterfront, and the information that we're getting, there was a large stockpile of ammonia nitrate. Now that's a fertilizer, and that fertilizer became famous in the Oklahoma bombing many years ago. And near that storage of ammonia nitrate, we're still not clear how much of this stuff was there and why it was there. There was a fireworks, also a storage house of fireworks speculation, something lit that fireworks on. It got into the ammonium nitrate. You had this absolutely huge explosion. So an area of Beirut looks like a bomb went off, a huge bomb went off. Also, and one of the aspects of this, one of the downside aspects of this, on the waterfront, huge silos with wheat inside. Why is that important? Lebanon, 85% of the wheat that feeds the population there is imported. That was destroyed, anything that they had there. So we need to be praying for the folks in Lebanon today. We know that Hezbollah, the terrorist group, has a presence there, but there are also many Christians in that country, and we need to be praying for them today. It is absolute devastation. One of the private hospitals in there was almost completely destroyed. Many of the medical personnel were among the fatalities.
Yeah, Steve Jordahl showed us in our story meeting this morning a video. This one you're describing, Fred. Someone driving on a, looks like a highway, about a mile from the smoke plumes, the original smoke plumes, I guess probably from the original fire. And then it shows the explosion. We're talking probably a good mile away. And it flipped his car over. You get used to seeing those kinds of explosions because, you know, special effects, you know, in movies make it so realistic. But when you see it, you know, the real deal of somebody being influenced and affected by an explosion like that, it was horrifying. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen anything like it in terms of
it
real
like an atomic bomb, mm-hmm. almost. I mean, yes.
It was just like
something
wave.
Out of a Hollywood movie. You know? I mean, it was special effects. It was that.
That's just the shockwave from over a mile away shattered this man's glass. I guess it was a man driving, and flipped his car over. I've never seen it.
It'll be a long time before they recover from this, not to mention the physical destruction of the city, but also, how many dead confirmed, Fred?
As of about an hour ago, 100.
Okay, and they'll find many more people, I'm sure, and there are thousands injured.
Yes.
Yeah, 4,000, and they'll be finding many, many more. Brent Creeley, our producer, said he has posted to Facebook the video that I'm talking about, so you want to take a look at.
So this wasn't an act of terrorism.
No one is saying that at this point.
Well, when I first saw it, I said, that looks too big to be a terrorist attack. This looks like a gas line exploded all over the city or something like that. So if you tell it, so this is similar to what Timothy McVeigh used in Oklahoma City?
The ammonium nitrate.
In the back of a truck?
Yes.
Except massive amounts. More.
Right, in Beirut, you're talking
in
about.
In Beirut, maybe incorrect English there, but you get the idea. All right, we're very sad. Lebanon used to be considered the Paris of the Mediterranean. That's what it was referred to. It was a beautiful, beautiful city with lots of Christian people who lived there.
Yes.
Brigitte Gabrielle, if you've heard her on our program on AFR, on seen her on Fox News, that she was raised there. But then things began to deteriorate, I'm guessing, in the 70s or 80s. Remember the Marine barracks that were bombed?
Yes, I was under Ronald Reagan.
In Beirut.
In Beirut. Wasn't Lebanon a majority Christian country?
It was.
In the Middle East?
It was. Yes, it sure was. And sadly, I don't know if it still is or not.
But I don't think it is. I think Brigitte Gabrielle, in fact, said that Hezbollah began moving in to take over Lebanon, and I don't think it's majority Christian anymore, although I'll look at that.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues. Next story, Fred.
Well, the chaos that we have seen in various cities around the country, stemming back to the death of George Floyd there in Minneapolis. But there's a major new development this morning that we need to be talking about. You've seen the video of the police officer there in Minneapolis with his knee on the neck of George Floyd. You've seen that video, however, 30 seconds or so. But what has happened in the last 48 hours or so, there has been the release of video of the encounter between the police officers and George Floyd prior to what we have seen already. And last night, Tucker Carlson showed us the rest of that video leading up. Two things coming out of that video were this, that George Floyd, from the autopsy, we know that he had very high amounts of drugs in his system. One of those drugs can cause difficulties in breathing. And we also see in this new video that's being revealed for the first time that he complained about shortness of breath, that he couldn't breathe long before the incident with the police officer with his knee on his neck. In other words, they were trying to put George Floyd in the back of the police car, and he was saying, I can't breathe, connecting that to the drugs that were in his system.
He said, I can't breathe while he was standing up.
So what I want to do for you right now is what you're going to hear is a portion of that video that was released last night. Tucker Carlson will make some comments, but then you're also going to hear from the Attorney General of Minnesota, Keith Ellison. He used to be in Washington. Now he's the Attorney General of Minnesota. You're going to be shocked, perhaps, when you hear what he says in trying to explain why this earlier few minutes of the encounter has not been shown up to now. So here it is, cut number one. You're going to hear a bit of the audio from the video that was released last night.
Everything you just saw happened before the cop famously kneeled on Floyd's neck. At one point, an officer tells George Floyd to calm down or he's going to have a heart attack. So the question is, why haven't we seen the rest of the video until right now? Because Keith Ellison, he's the Attorney General in Minnesota, hid the video from the public.
I'm a firm believer in transparency and the public's right to know, but a higher priority for me is a successful prosecution. I am reluctant to do anything that would undermine the prosecution of this case.
Did you hear what the Attorney General of Minnesota just said? I believe in the public's right to know, but I didn't want them to know what you just saw in that video tonight because I wanted a successful prosecution of these police officers.
This video was leaked, evidently, somehow.
Right.
Yes.
Because I saw it first on the Daily Mail.
Yes.
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 That's where
website.
I watched it as well.
Anyway.
Well, that could hurt the case.
Against the officers,
against
you mean?
The officers. Some other things could probably hurt the case against the officers. Listen, let me just say, first off, when I watched this video, this is very sad. I mean, it's just sad all the way around. George Floyd could be alive today had he not so forcefully resisted. Allegedly, he was high. I mean, I'm saying allegedly because these appear to be facts that have come out, but I don't want to say for sure because we need to wait. Allegedly, the cops showed up because a store owner said that George Floyd had passed a counterfeit bill, and George Floyd remained in his vehicle with two other occupants, never left. And so it seems as if he was not in his right mind. He was clearly afraid, but he was a large man. They did everything they could. At one point when I was watching, George Floyd was screaming. He would not. They put him into the vehicle, and then he came out the other side. So all that, to me, I think mitigates the second-degree murder charge. It does not appear to be, clearly does not appear to be a racially motivated issue with the police, but I don't think it necessarily helps Derek Chauvin, however you pronounce his last name, because sitting on a man's neck for 9 minutes, that clearly is wrong. But I don't think you're going to get him on second degree murder. I'm wondering if Keith Ellison's comments might not hurt even the whatever case is against the other three police officers.
Yeah,
and then the manslaughter.
Explain to me how the Attorney General Ellison would think the release of the full video to the public would hurt his prosecution case?
Because it puts everything in a different context, and Ed just alluded to it just a moment ago.
But the jury's going to see it, Fred.
The jury is going to see it, but they're going to see that it, in the bigger picture of this, the police officers, it appears, with the whole video in mind right now, they weren't motivated by racism.
No, right. No, I agree with that.
That's the important ingredient here.
Because that's what this whole thing has become politically.
Yes.
Now, even the nonviolent protests were about racially motivated police brutality.
Yes.
And that changes the whole narrative here. Because now Derek Chauvin, the officer who was kneeling on George Floyd's neck, now you have a situation where perhaps the police department should change some of the chokeholds, and maybe Chauvin showed, you know, callous disregard for human life, whatever you get. But it's not a racially motivated act. And
listen, all this fella had to do, this George Floyd. Okay, I'm making an opinion. Now, I think the autopsy did show he had drugs in his system, right?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. The guy looks high as a kite when you watch the video. He's in a panic mode.
Yeah.
He is a huge man. I don't know how big he is, but he's strong and muscular. And everything the police ask him to do from the get-go, he refuses to do, at least initially. He has to be forced into it. He wouldn't move. He wouldn't get his hands up in the car. He wouldn't get out of the car. He was yelling, don't, he was screaming, not, well, he was,
don't shoot me.
Don't shoot me. You know, when he's saying he can't breathe, he did say he can't breathe on the ground when the knee was on the neck, but he's also saying I can't breathe when he was standing up.
And he's saying he was claustrophobic.
Claustrophobic. So, and some people have said, well, if you're claustrophobic, why are you sitting in a small car with three people?
Right.
When you're that big. So what I've heard from a lot of police officers, and we know this to be true. No, I take that back. I haven't personally heard. I've heard from a few, but it's common now for people that are, you know, pulled over and they got something to hide. Maybe they got drugs on them or they don't want to cooperate or whatever. They say things like, I can't breathe, or I need to go to the hospital.
Right.
You know, something, anything to get out of being arrested and going to jail.
Right.
Right. So a lot of the things that they say are, the police officers are used to just being lied to.
Right.
Repeatedly and given phony, bogus things. So you probably get callous to that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but the main point here is that this was supposedly a racially charged police, as you say, act of police brutality with threat to a man's death. And while I agree with you, I don't see how the officer is going to get completely exonerated legally when he sat on the guy's neck for 8 or 9 minutes and he died. But how you can watch that video and go, well, they were targeting a black man, I don't think that's...
I didn't see anything. I'm not a police
officer. They didn't call him a racial epithet, or
right.
Is that what you call it?
One of the officers was black, wasn't it?
He's half black, I think.
Okay.
But another one was, looked like he was Oriental, half Oriental or Oriental. All the guy had to do, listen, we repeat this story over and over again. All George Floyd had to do was get out of the car, like the police officers instructed him to, get your hands up. If you're going to be arrested, then put your hands behind your back and go down to the police officer, get your picture taken, and then take it up.
Right.
I don't even know if they got bail in Minneapolis. They don't in New York.
Right.
For a counterfeit like that, he would have probably been released immediately. And you are talking to, I don't know if the cops knew this at the time, George Floyd was not a, he may have been trying to get himself straightened out. I'm not going to say that people can't change. Obviously, we know that Christ can change people's lives radically. But the fella had a He was in prison in Texas for a felony where he went into a woman's home who was pregnant, and he put a gun to her stomach.
Right.
And threatened to kill her baby and her too, I guess. He confessed to this.
Right.
So he had a record. Now, I don't know if the cops knew that when they went up to, you know, to deal with him on this particular arrest. What we're saying here, this guy's been held up as a martyr. There's murals everywhere in some of these big cities. Three funerals. He died in an unfortunate situation. The courts will determine how responsible those officers are in his death. But had he just complied with what the officers asked him to do, he would be alive today, probably back to his normal life.
Right.
You aren't going to get too much for a $20 counterfeit. But he refused to cooperate. And a lot of people say, well, that's because he was high. You know, and that's what it appears on the video to me. He's acting irrationally.
Yes.
So you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues, but murder two is a high standard, right?
I don't think Chauvin will get, I don't think they'll get him on murder two. But I'm guessing the lesser charge, manslaughter, you know, maybe negligence. I don't know how they, you know, throw in negligence.
Those other three might
disregard.
Just be no fault.
They may remain fired, and there may be some lesser charge because they didn't get Chauvin off George Floyd's neck.
Also, in the video, one of the bystanders there on the street, not an officer, is yelling, "Quit resisting!"
Yeah, I think that was the woman that was George Floyd's ex,
telling him, "Quit resisting arrest."
Yeah.
So anyway, you're listening to Today's Issues on AFR. Next story, Fred.
Yeah, I know we're coming up on a break, I think, in just a few minutes. So what I'd like to deal with when we come back from the break is the hearing yesterday in the Senate. Senator Ted Cruz held a hearing as part of the Judiciary Committee looking at domestic terrorism that's been coming out of the George Floyd incident, what is we've been seeing in Portland, what we've seen in Seattle, and in other Democrat-controlled cities in this country. Yesterday, he had a hearing. Obviously, there are Democrats who sit on that committee with Ted Cruz. And the thrust of it is Ted Cruz, Senator Ted Cruz, is making the point that not one of those Democrats yesterday sitting on that committee would name Antifa as being part of these protests. So we're going to hear from Ted Cruz when we come back from the break. We're going to hear from Democrat Senator from Hawaii, Mazie Hirono, who just thinks it's disgusting that Ted Cruz is holding this hearing. And then we're going to hear from Andy Ngo. He is an investigative undercover journalist. And we're going to hear from what he has found out. He went undercover amongst the protesters, amongst the domestic terrorists. And folks, it's going to shock you, I believe, when you hear what he has to report, how organized Antifa is, and how they've been using the peaceful protesters as human shields for what they are trying to carry out, and that is violence.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do with this expression, but it's contradictory, but we keep using it. Organized anarchy. Mm-hmm. Huh? That makes sense to you?
Well, yeah, they're anarchists in terms of wanting to create chaos, but their intentions are pretty clearly and logically laid out. They're using chaos to achieve the goals of overthrowing the government.
Okay, duly noted. Great explanation. We shall return momentarily with more of Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network.
Yeah.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Jan Markell of Understanding the Times Radio.
I gave 10 things that we should be looking to in the new year that I think have prophetic significance. This was my number one sign, the rise of lawlessness. Little did I know, I'm here in Minneapolis. I'm at Ground Zero, so I know lawlessness.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook. It's Truth for Youth Week, and whether students are in school, online, or somewhere in between, everybody needs Jesus. Let's get the Word of God to as many students as possible.
First time I heard about the Truth for Youth Bible was on American Family Radio. I promised myself that I was going to give it to someone who wasn't following Jesus.
The Truth for Youth Bible appeals to students with the entire New Testament and full-color comics which present the gospel and moral truths.
I just want to thank you so much because after reading it, I decided to give my heart to the Lord.
Revival Fires International will give one Truth for Youth Bible to every student between the ages of 13 and 18 who promises to pass it along to a friend this school year. Visit truthforyouth.com. That's truthforyouth.com.
The Truth for Youth Bible inspired me and led me to Christ.
That's truthforyouth.com. Help spread God's Word with the Truth for Youth Bible and AFR.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Wondering how you'll finish your degree now? At Liberty University, we want to help. So when you transfer into one of our more than 100 undergraduate online programs this fall, you could earn up to $3,600 in transfer student scholarships, or more if you live in Virginia. That means you could pay less than $900 per course and transfer in up to 75% of your degree. That's up to 90 credits. Save time and money at a school that's been helping students like you for over 30 years. Learn more by texting DEGREE to 49595. That's DEGREE to 49595.
Two pro-life protesters were arrested outside a Planned Parenthood abortion clinic in Washington, D.C. the other day. They were caught writing "Black Preborn Lives Matter" in chalk on the sidewalk. Students for Life say they had a permit to protest, but were arrested anyway. So look, I'm a fierce defender of the First Amendment. I don't believe in banning books or movies or anything else for that matter. If you don't like the book, don't read it. If you don't like what I have to say, listen to NPR. Well, don't do that. So when government leaders crack down on the right to peacefully protest, well, that cannot go unanswered. The fact is, the Black Lives Matter protests have been anything but peaceful. They have vandalized public streets, burned down buildings, bloodied police officers, terrorized motorists, all without a permit. And yet the only people to get punished are a bunch of pro-lifers who actually had a permit to protest? What happened to equal justice under the law? I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
All right, so welcome back, everybody. We're about to hear a clip from Senator Ted Cruz yesterday at a hearing regarding Antifa.
That is correct.
And what Senator Cruz is trying to do is put the Democrats on record as condemning the Antifa organization.
Yes. And he couldn't do it.
And is that all we need to hear?
Well, here's Senator Cruz.
More and more we're seeing signs that a significant portion of this violence, of this rioting, is not random. It's not spontaneous. Rather, it is coordinated and inspired by leftist anarchist groups, groups like Antifa. We're seeing too many local officials, mayors and governors, who've made a cynical decision that it's in their partisan interest to turn a blind eye to this violence.
Yeah, so he challenges the Democrats on the committee, come out, condemn Antifa. But Democrat senators like Mazie Hirono, who you're going to hear next, they just refuse to do so. Cut four.
That's called freedom of speech, and that's what this hearing title is, protecting speech. So all I can say is, look, we should all join hands and denouncing and whatever words you want to use about violent extremism of all stripes. And I think we can all agree on that. So to constantly accuse Democrats of not caring about that is really, I can only say that you aren't listening. So I hope this is the end of this hearing, Mr. Chairman, and that we don't have to listen to any more of your rhetorical speeches. Thank you very much. I'm leaving.
And I would also note that throughout her remarks, she still did not say a negative word about Antifa, nor has any Democrat here. You're welcome to say something negative about Antifa right now.
I think that I've covered the subject quite well.
She declined to speak, so that is the position of the Democratic Party. I thank you.
So the question then becomes, why?
Well,
why?
Okay. Once again, I have to warn our listeners, don't throw things at me. Just because I have an observation, okay? She did, if you listen to her, she did condemn. She said we can all join together in condemning violent extremism, acts of violence. That's what she did say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all hear that?
Mm-hmm.
What she won't say is Antifa, because Ted Cruz wants her to say Antifa. This is like a playground argument in a way. You see what I'm saying? They're not going to say that because they don't want to give Cruz the satisfaction of knowing he got them to cry uncle. So, but she did condemn, what did she say, violent extremism? And we can all, of all stripes, mm-hmm. She did say that. So, I'm just trying to be somewhat fair, you know, and the Democrats are always fair. So,
yeah.
So we want to be fair. But okay, now, so you can put your rock down that you want to throw at me. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I would say this, too, that the reason why Senator Hirono and other Democrats don't want to mention Antifa by name is because Antifa got most of its juice from opposing Hitler, okay? By which
Who's
I
Hitler
mean
in this case?
Donald Trump.
Gotcha.
So Antifa, their whole shtick is we're opposing fascism and we're opposing the head fascist, Donald Trump, and the Democratic Party takes that angle as well. So they say, well, I think we can all agree that, you know, join hands and condemn violence, and because they have to say that. They can't say we're in favor.
But they don't want to name Antifa.
They don't want to name Antifa because Antifa is part of their constituency.
You know, Fred, what she should have said is, okay, I'll condemn Antifa. You know why? Because I might as well be condemning the Easter Bunny, because you're talking about a mythological group that doesn't even exist. So there you go. You happy now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Antifa.
That's what Jerry Nadler said.
Yeah. He said it was a myth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, so, you know, what's telling here, though, Fred, is in the overall picture is the Democrats are either embracing or they are not critical of these demonstrations, these riots, these protesters, these vandals that are in these big cities and doing so much destruction.
Yeah.
That's the telling point here, I think, and it's hurting them, I think, in the polls.
Let me go all legendary.
Does Fred even need to be here, or are we going to go back and forth, you and me? Huh?
Well, let me just go.
Fred went all the way to Venus.
Yes.
And now we don't even let him talk.
Well, it takes time for his signal
okay,
to
go
reach
ahead, I'm sorry.
Earth. And Fred, and I like your comment on this. There's an old Jewish legend about a creature called the Golem.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And in this legend of the Jewish people, you could call forth the Golem, this monster, to attack your enemies, but the danger was that the Golem wouldn't stop,
mm-hmm.
and its destruction would be more widespread than you intended. Mm-hmm. Kind of a warning against revenge, taking revenge. And to me, that's the risk that the Democratic Party is running by allying with and unleashing the Golem of Antifa and Black Lives Matter, the organization, not the sentiment.
Yes.
They cannot predict where this destruction is going to lead them. And if they are successful in defeating Donald Trump in November, how certain are you, Democrats, that you can control the Golem after it has gotten you what you wanted?
I think that is an excellent point, because if anybody thinks the Democrats, if they're successful in the November election, that Antifa and Black Lives Matter, the organizations, are going to go away, that they're not going to demand even more than from the Democrats when they get in power, then think again. Antifa, Black Lives Matter, as we've pointed out many times, Black Lives Matter, their leadership admits they are Marxist trained. They lean Marxist in their ideology. So a success for the Democrats in November is not going to stop them. They're going to push even more and more for their agenda. I wanted to just bring in the testimony yesterday from that hearing from Andy Ngo, the undercover journalist who has gone and kind of gone into amongst the protesters. If anybody thought that Antifa was just there, or members of Black Lives Matter was there to support the peaceful protesters, think again. Here's Andy Ngo, cut number five.
I have worked undercover for months in Portland and other cities, and I've seen with my own eyes how hundreds of so-called protesters work together to carry out acts of organized criminality against government and civilians. Both violent and nonviolent participants play a role. For example, Antifa, by their own admission, depend on mass numbers of peaceful protesters to act as human shields. Those privy to the organizational workings are divided into units, one to monitor police movement, one for street medics, one for vandals and arsonists, and so on. They coordinate on encrypted chat applications like Signal because they are extremely difficult for law enforcement to monitor.
So there you have it. He has seen the organized elements. Very interesting that he said that they use the peaceful protesters as human shields so they can get in close, carry out their Molotov cocktail bombings, that sort of thing. These are people who believe in violence. They believe in the violent overthrow of the government. And that's what's happening in our country right now, an attempt to overthrow the government. Going back to the Democrats, I think they don't want to admit this violence is occurring in Democrat-controlled cities. Go back to Seattle, back about a month and a half, 2 months ago, where the mayor of Seattle, the governor of Washington State, allowed these terrorists to take over a three-block section of the city. It only ended when there were people inside that three-block area were murdered.
Right.
And then the mayor took action after that. But she was pleased to allow them to go in, take over that portion of the city, shut down businesses. People were put out of business, many of them for good because of the damage that was done.
All right. Politically speaking, presidential politics are won by coalitions, right? Mm-hmm. Republicans put their coalitions together.
Right.
Democrats put their coalitions together, and you try to see who has the most in the end to win an election. So, on the Democrat side, they need the Bernie Sanders, AOC wing of their party, which I'm just guessing represents 30% to 40%, maybe 30% of their
of the Democratic
Party and their constituency. They already have a low. The Democrats do have a low. Excitement level for Joe Biden. That's been proven in many polls. The excitement for President Trump on the Republican side way out does the excitement for Joe Biden on the Democrat side. Most of Joe Biden's support comes from people who just want Donald Trump out of office. Okay, if Joe Biden was a ham sandwich,
right?
They'd vote for the ham sandwich. So that is there. I don't think that's enough to carry the day. It usually isn't just a protest vote, especially in a presidential election. So the Democrats are trying to put their coalition together to beat Donald Trump. Well, when 30% or 40% of your the group you need to reach out to bring them in to the fold, to get them excited, is supportive of Marxism, socialism, in many ways communism, Black Lives Matter organization, for example, Antifa,
right.
and all the things that Bernie Sanders and AOC wanted to get into, the universal health care, doing away with private insurance, I guess just getting rid of our military, getting rid of the police, all these things. The Democratic mainstream, if that's what you want to call them, the establishment, they don't want to upset these people, okay? So they try to walk the fine line between not being critical of them, but also not being seen as endorsing them. Does that make sense? So you're trying to walk a fine line. That's why Nancy Pelosi says things like, people will do what people do. When asked about, do you have a problem with mobs taking down statues all over the country?
Right.
So she says people will do what people do. See, she's trying not to be critical of the 30% of the Democrat Party that they need in November to come out and vote for Joe Biden so that they can beat Donald Trump and perhaps take back the United States Senate. So does that make sense?
Yeah, and in some ways that 30% represents the most excited part of their voter
base.
That's
where the energy is.
Yeah, the energy's there. The commitment is there. The going door to door is there. The signing up.
But they're not apt to do that for Joe Biden because he doesn't excite them on the left.
Well, you can't insult them. In other words, you can't insult your foot soldiers
because they
may stay home.
Yes.
And they're not going to go out and sign people up and get them registered and.
So for example, if the senator yesterday that we heard earlier from Hawaii goes, yes, I condemn Antifa, absolutely. I'm against any kind of violent protest or anarchy or the
And
threat,
I'm against Marxists.
Marxists and the threat to overthrow our government. Absolutely. Write me down as being with you, Senator Cruz.
Right.
Then she would have been canceled.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Biden campaign would have been asked, Are you opposed to Antifa too? You know, are you opposed to those of us who are trying to carry out the revolution? Because we're the ones that are going to get the vote out for you this time. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, they'd have been protesting outside Senator Hirono's door
and outside of Joe Biden's basement.
Regardless of the geese.
Well, they'd have been drowned out probably by the... Is it Canada geese, Fred? Is that what you're saying? It's not Canadian, right?
No, it's Canada geese.
Canada geese.
Yes.
All right, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. If you want to send us an email, go to comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. Fred, there is something that's popped up in the news this morning. I don't know if you were going to bring this up, the Sally Yates testimony.
I haven't seen that, no.
Well, for Fred, our newsman, I will break news to you then. How about that?
All right. She's currently testifying. So
she is Sally Yates is the former Deputy U.S. Attorney General. She was there. She was appointed by Obama. Is that correct? I think that's correct. She came on board during the Obama administration. Now, she is being asked by Lindsey Graham. Because she was the one that was in the room with President Obama, Vice President Biden, then FBI Director James Comey, and her, and there may have been others, and Comey was telling Obama about what's happening with General Flynn, right? Mm-hmm. And Sally Yates, who's supposed to be in that chain of command, acts shocked. This is what the reports were. She doesn't know anything about it. You know, that they're going after Flynn. And so this morning, Lindsey Graham, senator from South Carolina, asked her about this. Let me find that. Okay. Yates, said, again, keep in mind, she's an Obama appointee. And she says, Yates says, I'm reading this from the Fox News blog, the live blog feed from the Senate hearing. Yates says that she was upset that Comey, quote, didn't coordinate, end quote, and acted unilaterally on the Flynn question. Senator Graham asked her this question, did Comey go rogue? And then Sally Yates says, quote, you could use that term, yes, end of quote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that looks pretty bad on Ed on James Comey here for Obama official to say, yeah, he went rogue. Because the whole thing is that Comey was out to get General Flynn. He was out to spy on the Trump campaign. He was basically out to subvert the new administration.
Yeah, and this exchange now, again, this is all live blogging, so I have not had a chance to read everything. But the exchange you just mentioned, the context of that was about Comey authorizing Peter Strzok and another agent to interview Flynn without informing Sally Yates about the plans for that interview. And, of course, we've gone over that numerous times where, you know, Michael Flynn said, do I need an attorney? No, you don't need an attorney. We're not investigating you. All those kinds of things.
They set him up.
They set him up. And that's kind of like one of those, you know, hey, Peter Strzok, come here. This is what I want you to do. And so it does look bad on James Comey, and it's not the only thing that looks bad on James Comey, but this – now, I don't know what can come of this legally, but we do need to at least get to the bottom of it.
Well, right? I think Lindsey Graham warned that this hearing was coming that you're starting to see today. We know that the Democrats do not want John Durham to release his report before the election.
Right.
The whole escapade that we saw last week when Attorney General Barr went before Gerald Nadler's Judiciary Committee. I believe it was, when he was treated just so terribly. They're trying to discredit the Attorney General of the United States, hoping that they could browbeat him into withholding that John Durham report because, Lindsey Graham told us a couple of weeks ago, the indication is that some people should go to jail. James Comey, Andrew McCabe, one of those, because the term rogue this morning is being used, I think, very carefully, because James Comey, part of an effort to discredit the Trump administration before it could even get started.
Well, look, if Durham does not release his report before the election, if there's a Democrat in the White House, it'll be buried. Mm-hmm. Nobody will ever see it.
Yeah.
This whole thing will go away. And so if Durham cares about this, I don't know how long this has gone. What, over a year? Has it been a year that the Connecticut federal attorney?
I don't think it's been a year. But
hadn't been a year.
Yeah.
But this is never going to see the light of day unless it is released before the election. And by the way, if it's finished, if his work's finished, it should be released.
Yes.
You shouldn't put off the release of it for fear that it's going to influence the election. If it should influence the election, you know?
I don't know why things take so long in Washington, D.C. I mean, Mueller went, 2 years?
Yeah.
Robert Mueller, 2 years. These investigations, I know that they run into people stonewalling them, on giving them documents they need, these investigators. They run into people who say, I can't meet with you here, there, and the other. You're going to have to come with me this date. And then they got to subpoena things, and people got to go pick them up. And I mean, all this stuff, I understand that. But I think, too, there's an element of this. Like with Robert Mueller, hey, we got an unlimited budget. Well, I got 10, 20 lawyers who need to be paid. Let's just go on for another year. What the heck? Huh? Who's going to stop us? We just say we're continuing our investigation. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we just milk this thing for all it's worth. I think that happens sometimes, too, as well. 2 years? 2 years when Mueller knew from the beginning there wasn't any there.
Yeah.
So John Durham, I don't even know. I'm going to guess 8 to 10 months ago when he was appointed by Barr. Why don't you look that up? He's the U.S. attorney from Connecticut. Now, he's neither a Democrat or a Republican, as I understand it. He's supposed to be a neutral fella and just trying to look for the evidence here. But if I were James Comey, I would be worried that Sally Yates is saying that he went rogue,
May,
FBI director.
It was May 2019, April or May 2019.
So it's over a year then.
Yeah. Oh, wow. My, how pandemic's time flies. Okay, so you were right, Ed.
Well, I didn't know for yeah. sure, but it just seemed like his name had been rattling around for a while.
You know, and then, Fred, we also got James Comey confessing in that interview he did at some school, some university, where he's basically talking about going rogue.
Yeah.
Remember that? He's going, yeah.
Yep.
We knew that they were out of sorts over there at the White House. We'd normally go through the White House counsel or to get an interview, but we decided to send two guys over while they were hanging the curtains.
Yeah.
You know, so we could to get around normal protocol for interviewing a national security advisor. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically that's basically what James Comey was bragging about.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah. So, well, take advantage of the confusion when there is a change of administration. Let's take advantage of that. Let's kind of catch them off guard.
And now we know, you know, not to repeat things we've heard many times, but just to remember here that the FISA court, which was the special court set up to an agency like the FBI has to go to get the right to surveil a private American citizen. You have to present. It's kind of like getting a search warrant, I guess. The FBI manipulated the FISA application, right?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they lied about it.
Yes.
To be able to get the right to spy on the Trump campaign. And remember when somebody went to Trump Tower and told him, hey, you're being spied on. You better move out of here. And then he moved his headquarters to the golf resort there in New Jersey that he owns. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we know there's truth to that.
Yeah.
So
he was mocked. He was mocked for saying, and he used the word wiretap, but he was talking about being surveilled. The federal government, the FBI was going through surveillance.
Somebody who knew went and basically told him what was going on. This was after the election. Between the election and the inauguration.
Right.
If I remember correctly. Anyway, we'll see what happens with any of these characters. The deep state is... the deep state, by that I mean the long-time Washington good old boys club, which is made up of Republicans and Democrats.
Right.
They have a way of shielding their own from serious consequences to actions. You remember what happened to Lois Lerner from the IRS?
Nothing.
Nothing. Huh? Nothing. So Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, puts the server in her bathroom at her home to do our country's business.
So she could hide her stuff.
Even sent classified information over this, destroyed emails so that they couldn't be used as evidence against her. And James Comey come out and said, I don't know. I don't think she meant anything by it. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
We just can't prove intent. You know, bless her heart. I'm using
she asked a couple of her staffers to take these external hard drives out back and beat them with a hammer and pour bleach on them. She didn't really know.
Come on,
that
we
that
can't.
Was
we can't. We don't.
It.
We don't have intent.
Yes.
Huh? I don't. Well, first of all, you don't. It doesn't require intent. Secondly, I think Mr. Comey, intent would be hiding your emails from congressional oversight in the first place.
Yes.
There's a reason you want your internet server in your basement and not at the office.
But in her defense, all those emails were about her yoga class.
But my point is nothing ever happened to her.
Right.
Okay, because the deep state protects its own.
Yeah.
That's my point. All right, Fred, thank you.
You are welcome.
Okay, we shall return with more good news. Coming up,
actually,
in,
do we Tim do Todd?
Some, we do have some good news, some great news, in fact.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.